Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. But I look good. I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's current sports right here on WKAR AM 870 94.5 FM. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin, and we have a ton to get to on today's current sports. We will have plenty of updates for you when it comes to the local sporting world. News that concerns the Michigan State sexual assault investigation as a certain MSU Board of Trustee member let a certain cat out the bag and then tried to renege on a statement. We'll bring you those details. You don't want to miss that. Also, big local news concerning the DeWitt Panther baseball team in the Capital Area Dean Shippey Diamond Classic Championship game last night at Kircher Municipal Park here in East Lansing as the DeWitt Panthers win their second Diamond Classic Championship in program history over the Holt Rams, doing it in dominating fashion. We'll bring to you that news, and we will have a post-game report as current sports was in the his house to witness that one. Also, how about the Detroit Tigers, right? Blanking the LA Angels last night at Comerica Park. Things going pretty well for the Tigers right now, at least. And we, of course, will recap last night's Game 3 of the NBA Finals out in Cleveland, Ohio, as the Cleveland Cavaliers now stare at a 3-0 hole. No one in NBA history has ever come back after being down 3-0 in NBA Finals history. We will recap that game and talk about how we got to this point and what may be the most boring NBA playoffs of all time. I have to say that, folks. We'll talk about last night's game, though, and we will welcome a very special guest to today's show around the 1:30 p.m. mark. We will be talking about a sport that I don't think we've ever talked about here on WKAR's current sports, the sport of futsal. Yeah, you're probably driving your car or at home right now saying, Al, what in the world are you talking about? Well, we'll be happy to explain as our very own engineer Isaac Constance has set up an interview with Jeremy Kleppel, who is the owner and also a player for Lansing City Futsal. We'll tell you what exactly futsal is and so much more. You don't want to miss that chat. And then on the back end of the show, seeing as it is Thursday, we will hop into our current sports time machine and take a look at exactly what happened on this particular date in sports history, as we dub it Throwback Thursday. All of that and so much more. If you want to be a part of the show, you know how you can do that. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR underscore sports. So much to get to, so little time. I'll stop wasting it. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. right, and we begin with news concerning the Michigan State sexual assault investigation surrounding the MSU football program. In a radio interview on the huge radio show on WBBL-FM 107.3, MSU Board of Trustees member Mitch Lyons, he said that former Michigan State defensive lineman Austin Robertson was the, quote, reporting player, end quote, from the Jones Day report that told head coach Mark D'Antonio about the alleged sexual assault by a trio of now former players back in January. Lyon, quote, from the radio interview reads, quote, when Austin Robertson came into his office for a regularly weekly meeting, Coach D asked him the regular questions he typically asked him, and then Robertson became a little emotional and didn't even go into details, end quote. Lyons went on to say, quote, he alluded to the fact that something happened and Coach D had a sense that it involved some sort of sexual allegation. And he immediately said, don't say anything more, end quote. Yeah, big stuff there, folks. Also, according to the Jones Day report, Robertson reportedly helped the alleged victim, telling Coach D, quote, I had to get her out of there. She is my friend, end quote. Robertson did not provide details of what happened and did not tell D'Antonio the situation involved sexual misconduct or assault. And then just one day later, yesterday afternoon, Lyons told the Detroit News that he misspoke and added that he, quote, confused the cases with Robertson having legal issues of his own, end quote. I really don't understand how you can have a mistake of that magnitude. We'll talk about that later on this hour. Don't want to miss that. To much lighter news, the DeWitt Panthers won the Diamond Classic last night, and it wasn't even close. A 13-hit, 14-run game that eventually led to a mercy rule in the fifth inning, where all ingredients led to a dub. 14-0 over Holt. The 14-0 shutout win was the second largest margin of victory in a title game in the 56-year history of the Diamond Classic. DeWitt broke the game open with an 8-run third inning, where it sent 12 batters to the plate. Mark Connelly, Nolan Knopf, and Jace Preston all drove in a pair of runs during that inning. All right, more than Mitten Michigan high school basketball stars will lace them up once more as prep athletes in the Michigan All-Star Basketball game that will take place. More than 20 will lace them up. The game will take place at 7 p.m. on June 14th in LCC's Gannon Gymnasium, and admission for the event is $5. The roughly two dozen players will be split into two teams, and we will give you the rosters later this hour. A ton of names featuring great local talent. That's going to be a very cool event. And yes, Current Sports will be in the house for that one as well. All right, there have been high expectations surrounding the Lansing Lugnuts top teenage prospects, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. The two young men have certainly delivered as they have both been named the Eastern Division All-Star Team to the Eastern Division All-Star Team. Moreover, they are both going to be starters. How about that? So far this season, Bichette is sporting a .382 batting average with 37 RBIs and a 1.072 OPS. Guerrero Jr., he's a stud, folks. He has a .335 average, 32 RBIs, and a 913 OPS to his name. The game will take place on June 20th at Dow Diamond in Midland, Michigan. The two players will be joined by some of their teammates as Lugnuts pitchers Justin Maese and Gano and Cena have also received all-star bids. How about the Detroit Tigers, huh? On a complete roll right now. After dropping the opening game of the series against the LA Angels on Tuesday night, the Tigers evened up the series at a game apiece with a 4-0 dub over the Angels at Comerica Park. In his second win in as many starts, Buck Farmer gave a phenomenal performance on the hill. He tossed 6 2/3 scoreless innings of work, allowing only 3 hits while striking out 5. When Farmer left the game, he had a 1-0 lead from a run that was scored in a really kind of funky way. The Tigers had the bases loaded, no outs, in the bottom of the third, and DH Victor Martinez was at the plate. Martinez hit a ground ball to right to Angel second baseman Cliff Pennington, who turned a double play. While this was going on, smart base running from Ian Kinsler allowed him to score, and this gave the Tigers a lead. How about that? Justin Upton launched a three-run homer to left field in the bottom of the eighth to put the game out of reach and secure the Tigers dub. The rubber match will take place today. First pitch set for right now, 1:10 p.m. Detroit sends out Michael Fulmer to the mound. L.A. will counter with J.C. Ramirez. We'll keep you updated on that one throughout the hour. Understandably so, the Detroit Red Wings fans are likely trying to forget the struggles of last year. The Wings not only missed the playoffs for the first time in a quarter century, they said goodbye to their home for nearly 30 years in Joe Louis Arena. Now, with all of that behind them, fans have plenty to look forward to, and it all starts on September 23rd. Mark your calendars. The Wings released their 8-game warm-up schedule today, featuring games with the Boston Bruins, Chicago Blackhawks, Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Toronto Maple Leafs. After 3 games on the road against Boston, Pittsburgh, and Chicago, the Wings will then return home 2 days later at the 23rd for the first game at Little Caesars Arena against original six rival Boston. Pretty cool stuff. All right, news coming out of the camp of the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions have signed 2 new defensive tackles to the roster today. Ego Ferguson, I love that first name, and Bruce Gaston have been brought on and will add new competition to the back of the Lions roster. Ferguson, a second-round pick by the Chicago Bears in 2014, played in just 20 games over the past 3 years because of injuries. He had 2 sacks as a rookie in 2014, missed most of 2015 with a knee injury, and spent last year on IR with a shoulder injury. The Green Bay Packers claimed Ferguson off of waivers this spring, but released him days later when he failed his physical. Gaston has played for 9 previous teams since going undrafted out of Purdue back in 2014. He signed with the Bears after Ferguson's injury in 2015 and has also had short stints with the Green Bay Packers and Minnesota Vikings. He has 12 career tackles in 9 games. And last but certainly least, the Golden State Warriors are now not only 1 win away from their second NBA title in 3 years, but also on the cusp of making history if they do it without a blemish in the loss column throughout the playoffs. That's never been done. The Warriors shocked the Cavs and the basketball world as they pulled ahead late and picked up the 118-113 win. Late in the game, J.R. Smith hit a 3 to put the Cavs up 7. That was their last made shot of the game. Cleveland did not score in the last 3 minutes and 10 seconds of that game. The Cavs finished 0-for-8. And Kevin Durant pulled up to hit a dagger of a 3 right in LeBron James's eye hole with 45 seconds to play. That put the Dubs up for good. Late free throws from Durant and Steph Curry iced the win for the Warriors, who now have the chance to sweep and win the title on Friday night. We will have more on the NBA Finals in just a moment. We want to hear from you. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Again, we are currently live streaming, as we customarily do, via Facebook.com/currentsports. And you can even, again, join us via Twitter at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Let's start the show. Panthers are the Diamond Classic 2017 champions, and when you look at that scoreboard, yeah, it's a bit shocking to see 14-0, a complete shutout against the Holt Rams in what we all perceive to be a competitive matchup going into this one. DeWitt now wins its first Diamond Classic Championship since 2008. And there's a pretty interesting history when evaluating how they decided to celebrate when this one was said and done.
There was a legend at DeWitt that when the 08 team won the Diamond Classic, they went out and buried a bat out in our field. So then when we went to go dig it up, we couldn't find it. But that pickaxe happened to bring this team together, so we went and brought it with us today.
Back in 08, the seniors, when they won it, they buried a bat in center field out in our warning track. And 09, we made the finals again, and it was all secret correspondence between players. And they dug it up, had it in the dugout.
It ended up being found this morning when we got a little bit more information on the exact location.
Okay, buddy. Congrats. You too. Okay.
The boys were out there with metal detectors and the pickaxe, and they took a liking to the axe, so it came with us tonight. It's been a long time coming. You know, it's one of our goals every year is to win this thing. And the first challenge is getting in. You know, it's very competitive to get in. And, you know, we just haven't been able to get it done, but played great tonight. And my hat's off to the guys. They just played a near-perfect game.
This just means a lot to us. You know, we've been working really hard all season, working on everything, hitting, pitching, throwing. We've just been really coming together this offseason, and we really, really are coming together, and we really appreciate the opportunity we get to win this championship.
Yeah! Yeah! I had to get that. I saw it coming.
So how do the Panthers plan on celebrating this one? Well, you could clearly hear chatters of, hey, let's go watch the NBA Finals now. How we start this afternoon is WKAR's Current Sports with a little Prince. You know, I'm very remiss right now because yesterday I missed it. We had a busy show yesterday, but I want to salute one of the greatest artists of all time in Prince because yesterday was Prince Day. How about that? Very cool stuff, as of course Prince's birthday is, I believe, June 7th. And it's interesting because a lot of people made sure not to mention, those who are diehard fans of Prince, made sure not to mention that it was also Prince's birthday on June 7th, seeing as though they wanted to respect his faith. He was a Jehovah's Witness, and they don't celebrate birthdays. So, nonetheless, Minnesota claims that day, June 7th, as Prince Day, and there were many Prince tributes I saw throughout my timeline on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. So I thought it would be cool to start today's show by making up for yesterday's blunder and honoring the great Prince. Love this guitar riff, by the way, right? Well, as you just heard, intermixed with that was our coverage, is our coverage of last night's Diamond Classic Championship game between the DeWitt Panthers and the Holt Rams. Two of the best baseball teams in the area competing in that championship last night at Kircher Municipal Park. And I tell you what, no one expected it to be a 14-0 blowout and for it to end early in five innings of work. So I want to give a huge hats off to Alan Shankle, who is the head coach of the Panthers baseball team, as well as that entire team. And in particular, another voice you heard throughout that montage, the voice of Josh Robinson, who was the junior pitching stud who put on quite the performance really throughout the entire tournament. He was actually named as the Diamond Classic Tournament MVP, and intermixed with that story was not just the 14-0 blowout against Holt, but a very cool story intermixed and intertwined within that win, the fact that this is DeWitt's only second Diamond Classic Championship win since 2008. But also, if you guys remember, the following year, right after 08, DeWitt went to the Diamond Classic Championship game in 09. Now, they did not win that year. Again, this is just their second. So their first was in 08, even though they went to the finals in 09 again. They did not win that year. It's a very cool story concerning something that happened that year. That team that got to the Dean Shipley Capital Diamond Classic Championship game in 09, they buried a bat in the outfield at the school. And get this, the Panthers spent a ton of time, actually several hours, on Tuesday on a scavenger hunt with a pickaxe trying to find that bat in an effort to really bring some good mojo to last night's championship game. Well, they did find that bat early in the wee hours of the morning of yesterday on Wednesday morning. And they liked the pickaxe so much. The pickaxe is what they used to try and dig up the backyard, or I should say the outfield, at DeWitt High School. They liked it so much that they actually decided to bring the pickaxe along with them to that game. And then right after the handshakes took place, and they of course ran on the field and piled on top of each other to celebrate the Diamond Classic Championship win, they used the pickaxe and stabbed it in the field at Kircher Municipal Park in a very cool scene. So a big salute to Alan Schenkel and that team. Well-deserved. What a way to do it on that stage, on the championship stage. And now both of those teams, along with many from the area, now get ready to proceed with the high school baseball postseason. If you would like to see our coverage from that game last night, just simply go to facebook.com/currentsports. Moving on, a great segue, as I noted, after that game, was you heard the players saying, all right, let's go watch the NBA Finals now. Let's check out the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. And what a game it was last night in Game 3 of the NBA Finals out in Cleveland, Ohio. Let's tackle that, shall we, before we hit our first break. We encourage you all to weigh in, of course. I would love to hear your thoughts on how this series has gone. And as I'm looking right now on our Facebook page, a number of you are already weighing in on just that. But I want to start by saying this. I thought LeBron James played a fantastic game for the most part, folks. And I took notes throughout the entire game as I sat there on the couch with my dog. And I found this game to be intriguing on so many levels. First, as Isaac chimed in my ear during that introduction, this was, without a doubt, Isaac, we can agree on this, right? That this was the most entertaining game of the NBA Finals, bar none. Possibly you can make an argument that this has been the most entertaining game of the NBA playoffs. Probably the only game you can probably bring up is, I believe, that game 3 or 4 between the Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards, which went to overtime. That was thrilling, right? And also, how about the Boston Celtics giving the Cleveland Cavaliers an unexpected loss in lieu of the absence of Isaiah Thomas? So there's probably two other games you can bring up to make that argument. But NBA Finals, both teams going back and forth. Yeah, I like this one a lot more. First quarter, as the first quarter ended, there was a 39-32 Golden State lead. And you look at LeBron, who played 45 and a half minutes yesterday. That is truly remarkable. 45 and a half minutes. That's insane, right? When you look at the amount of minutes in time that LeBron James has spent on the basketball court, not even just this series, not even just last night's game, but this entire NBA season, he has put a lot of miles on his wheels. He only sat out a total of 120 seconds last night, folks. I mean, that's about as much time as it takes me to heat up a hot pocket in the morning. Crazy, right? That's it. 120 seconds is nothing. Truly remarkable. And LeBron, from the very start, you know, he had it going. He really had it going. You know, when he did go out for that brief period in the first quarter, he had 15 points, and the Cavs were up by as many as 5 points. He was 7 of 8 from the floor. But the moment LeBron James goes out, and this shows you just how much they lean on his greatness, LeBron goes out and Golden State goes on a 10-0 run. Back-to-back Curry threes. You saw a Sean Livingston layup. You had a Draymond Green dunk. It's just like, all right, LeBron's out the game. Let's start putting this up a gear. And then you saw that lead. Actually, and if you look at one of the Curry threes, they had to go back and review it. They actually marked it as a two, and then they tacked on the extra point. So it was 39-32 after the first quarter. And if you look at the 6:55 mark of the second quarter, I mean, my gosh, LeBron James was 10 of 11 from the floor. He had 23 points. That's when he matched his jersey number, right? And he was 3 of 4 from three-point land, having a great, great game. And to elaborate on the final numbers going into halftime, Steph Curry, 14 points, 4 of 9 from the floor, 4 of 6 from three-point land. Klay Thompson woke up. Not only did he play great defense last night, but man, oh man, was he a key to the offensive scheme for the Golden State Warriors last night. He had 16 points at the half, 6 of 9 from the floor, 2 of 3 from three-point land. That's getting the job. Well, I should say, no, that's Kevin Durant's stat line. Excuse me. Klay Thompson had 21 points. He led all scores for the Warriors at the half. 21 points, 7 of 11 from the floor. Kevin Durant chipped in 6 of 9 from the floor, 16 points. And Draymond Green, even though he did not light up the scoring column, he really does not need to when you have Curry, Thompson, Durant, those three really getting it going. Draymond Green does the little things, right? He had 6 boards at the half, 6 assists. I felt like every time I was looking up, Draymond Green was finding somebody on a backdoor cut or finding someone just sitting in the paint for an easy layup. He was spectacular last night. 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, a huge block. I believe, who was that on? Was that Tristan Thompson, Isaac?
Think
oh,
so.
My God. Just stuffed it right in his face. Get it out of here.
Yes,
all
it was.
Ball. One thing, though, about Day-Day last night, he had 3 fouls at the half, and he actually picked up a 5th foul in the fourth quarter, and I'm sitting there saying, oh, my goodness, this looks like a Cleveland Cavaliers win, right? 5 fouls? Somehow, someway, Draymond Green found a way to stay in that game last night. And also, Golden State Warriors, all they do is make history and break records, right? They had 12 threes in the first half. That is an NBA Finals record. LeBron James at the half had 22 minutes. That's more than any Warrior on the team. And again, he was 11 of 14, 3 of 5 from three-point land. He had 27 points at the half. Rolling on to the third quarter, Green starts off getting a wide-open layup. LeBron James passes up a finish at the rim to pass for Kevin Love for a missed three. It wasn't an ideal start to that second half for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And we saw LeBron James defer a few times in that second half. Nonetheless, still having a great game, right? I found it particularly interesting when Doris Burke got on the mic and she had her report coming out of the half, and I noted how she talked to Tyronn Lue, head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Tyronn Lue, in Doris Burke, her report, she said to Tyronn Lue, stated, quote, "We are breaking down mentally," end quote. And after hearing that report, I really thought that the Cavs were just going to really tuck their tail between their legs and start to see Golden State really take off with this game, which is what has happened in second halves in the prior two games leading up to game 3. That didn't happen, though. At the 4-14 mark, LeBron James finally scores his first second half points on an and one. That gave the Cavs a 1-point lead. And then a man who has the nickname of Uncle Drew just completely went off. Kyrie Irving is so good at this thing we call basketball, folks. Went off. He had 33 points by the end of the quarter, putting everything on display, ball handling, knocking down the jumper. How about that one play off the inbound, sideline inbounds? He spins off one guy and then goes straight to the hole, a bit of a hesitation, goes straight to the hole, 3 arms coming at him, finds the high glass, it sails right through the nylon. The kid can ball. I love watching Kyrie Irving play. Again, he had 33 points by the end of the quarter. And just to put numbers in perspective here, in game one, Golden State had a plus 13 advantage when it came to the third quarter differential. In game two, it was a plus 11 advantage. In game three, Cleveland had a plus 11 advantage at the end of the third quarter. How impressive is that, right? But the fourth quarter happened. Money time. And I would say the majority of the fourth quarter, the Cavs played great. They really did. It was back and forth. It was such entertaining basketball, but the fourth quarter brought about some bugaboos. Again, I mentioned Green picking up that fifth foul. Really thought the Cavs should have attacked him and got him out the game because he is everywhere. He's gonna win the defensive player of the year. But if you have the future depoy with five fouls, you got to go at him. You got to be aggressive and hope that he swipes at the basketball and gets out the game. You alleviate a pesk. You alleviate a net. That didn't happen. And get this, Kevin Durant didn't have, he kind of eased into that fourth quarter. He didn't have a second half field goal until the 7:40 mark. So he let, 3 minutes and some change go by. Golden State then really began to get it going. I want to just kind of fast forward here before we hit our first break and get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Again, stick around. We have Jeremy Kleppel, owner and player for the Lansing City futsal team, coming up. Don't want to miss that interview, but I want to go to the last 2 minutes here. I'm going to go on a quick rant. I'm going to take comments from you. I'm going to let Isaac weigh in on this as well, but I just want to get to the last 2 minutes because I had a few problems in the last 2 minutes when it came to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Cleveland up four, under 2 minutes. Kyrie, I'm going to go possession by possession here. Kyrie Irving drives for a missed layup, dives on the floor to get his own rebound, putting on the Superman cape of his own. All momentum on the Cavs side. The crowd goes insane when Kyrie Irving gets that rebound. LeBron James gets the basketball, and he settles for a fadeaway jumper. It looked like he was going to go to the hole at first, going to his right. He stops, spins, settles for a missed jumper at the 1:35 mark. Really didn't understand that move. And I think that's when fatigue started to come into play here. On the possession right after that, Kevin Durant nails a beautiful baseline floater. But for me, that play was the key. If you look at that game, you look at the last 2 minutes, and I went back on my DVR and looked. And people who's watching the Facebook feed here, I took meticulous notes on every possession under 2 minutes. I got like a graph. I have like five paragraphs on my notes right here. And I put a star next to that one because that's when you start to see momentum kind of shift here. A pick was set by Draymond Green. It was kind of a half-hearted pick. It's one of those picks that's kind of lazy, and then you kind of fall off looking for the pick and roll. If LeBron fights over that pick and doesn't come under and then goes on Kevin Durant, well, I should say Draymond Green, I should say, after he sets the pick, and you don't have Kevin Durant matched up against Tristan Thompson, because all KD did was sense blood was in the water and took Tristan Thompson baseline and hit a beautiful floater right over his reach, nothing but the bottom of the net. That play was key, because that's when you start to see the scoring really pick up for the Golden State Warriors. I think if LeBron fights through that screen, if he goes over that screen and not under and then falls back on Draymond Green, you at least do not compromise Tristan Thompson on Kevin Durant. That becomes a two-point game at that time. And then what did you have? A LeBron James ISO. ISO, ISO, ISO. Cleveland loves the ISO, folks. A LeBron James ISO, in which LeBron, if he just drives right, and John Berry highlighted this on SVP SportsCenter last night. We were on the same mental plane when looking at this play. LeBron James, if he just drives right, nobody is in the paint. If you look at the play again, LeBron drives there. He's either going to get fouled, which most likely would be against Draymond Green, and that would take him out the game, right? Or he's going to go to the hole and slam dunk or throw up or have a really good look at a layup, right? If he takes him to the right and goes for that, Cleveland goes up by four. Momentum still in your favor. That doesn't happen. LeBron crosses over to his left, And then once he drives and on that play, you got to give it up because they collapse on him. Kevin Love sets a screen for Kyle Korver in the corner. He's got a good look at it. Steph Curry did a good job of coming last minute and getting a hand into Korver's face. He misses the three there. Why not just drive on green and not even put yourself in that position? I'm puzzled there. Fatigue, right? That's the easy response to that question. But yeah, fatigue. I get it. Durant rebounds that missed Korver three, and then he nails a three right in the face of LeBron James to give Golden State the lead for good. And LeBron, in the post-game press conference, he noted it. He said, I went below the three-point line. I just wanted to get a hand up because I know KD loves to fall for it after he shoots that three-pointer. Kyrie then ISO ball again. ISO, right? Kyrie goes one-on-one against Klay Thompson on the ensuing possession, misses a contested tray. Curry rebounds. Durant is fouled. He nails two free throws, puts Golden State up by three. 12.9 remaining. LeBron James gets the inbounds in the corner, and what great defense by Andre Iguodala. Andre blocks it on the way up. The ball goes off LeBron James. Golden State gets the basketball. They inbound it to Curry. He hits free throws. And Golden State goes on to win by five. LeBron, in the last possession, which didn't even matter, LeBron just passes up court to Smith. He finds Love, and the ball literally hit the top of the backboard and hit the shot clock. Game over. I'm going to let that digest. Just let those few possessions digest. I will have a future rant later on this show concerning what I thought LeBron James should have done in that moment, in crunch time. If you want to be considered as the greatest basketball player to ever play in the NBA Finals so far, LeBron James scoring just 11 points in the fourth quarter, that's not going to cut it. And you just gave Michael Jordan fans like myself a ton of ammunition to say right now that you are not the GOAT. And you really need to put this conversation to a complete halt. Because I guarantee if you look at Michael Jordan's stat line in the fourth quarter, you will not have a combined three points in the NBA Finals where you score just a little over double digits. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will get to our guest for today's Current Sports, Jeremy Kleppel, owner and player for Lansing City Futsal. You don't want to miss this chat, folks. It should be a fun one. We'll explain what that is and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Lansing City Futsal is a second-year professional futsal club right here in Lansing. Last year, they attracted hundreds of fans each game to watch the fast-paced, exhilarating pace of play, and have opened up some youth clubs to grow the game. Now they have a new training facility that is located right outside of downtown Lansing as they gear up for the start of the season. Before we bring on our guest, Isaac Constance, you did a great job of setting up this interview. I have to know, my man, how did you get in touch with Lansing City Futsal?
Facebook's a wonderful thing, plain and simple. You know, you see some cool advertisement, something that catches your eye, and futsal is definitely a game where we'll explain it further, and of course, Jeremy will be able to elaborate on that a lot more than I can, but it's a game that not many people know about, but it's really exciting. It's a way that a lot of youth players are breaking into soccer. It almost Americanizes the game in some ways just because it's faster paced, very skill based. So we'll touch on all of that and more, but I saw it on Facebook and thought we have to have this on Current Sports.
Well, you did a great job of snagging Jeremy for this live in studio interview. Right now we have live in studio as Jeremy Kleppel, who is the owner and player for Lansing City Futsal. First off, Jeremy, how you doing, my man?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you on. You're rocking the gear right now, doing some cross promotion here as we have you right now live on Facebook Live. And I'll start this. Isaac and I are going to tag team this interview. I want to first ask you, though, a very simple question that is on the minds of many listening to this right now. What in the world is futsal?
That's a good question. So futsal is FIFA's official version of indoor soccer. Okay, so it's 5-on-5 played on a basketball court with a keeper. 4 court players and a keeper, so 5-on-5. It's a really fast game. Usually, the players are really technically skilled, really creative. It's in your face, thrilling and exciting to watch. And usually the score is a lot higher than a regular soccer game. So we see scores of, 9-2, sometimes in the double digits, but very high scoring game.
Jeremy, take me how you decided to bring this game to Lansing. What made you think that this would be a good community, a good fit to really help this sport thrive in?
That's a good question, Isaac. So I actually played futsal when I was growing up, since I was about 10 years old. And then I actually played in Brazil for a little while. I had a tryout with São Paulo FC in Brazil. It's a club that plays in the League One professional league over there for futsal. And I fell in love with the game over there. I played there for a little while with them and came back to Lansing and thought that, this game is a perfect adaptation for, American fans for soccer, right? Sometimes in a soccer game, sometimes it can get kind of boring or drawn out. There's not a lot of goals scored for some people. For me, I love soccer still. But for some people, the game's, not that exciting because there's not a lot of goals. Futsal is exactly the opposite. It's really fast, really intense. There's a lot of goals scored. And it's kind of a little bit of a version of basketball. Same sort of idea and thrill and excitement in the game.
I have to ask, Jeremy, can you kind of give our listeners a bit of your background? How old are you? Where are you from? And you started at 10 years old. Where did you start? It's a loaded question, but just kind of take it question by question.
No, that's right. So I'm 24 years old. I've actually lived in Lansing my whole life. I played club soccer for a coach when I was 10 years old. His name was Hank Long. He is, known as one of the best soccer coaches in the U.S. And he introduced me to futsal. We trained at the soccer club I was at. We trained in futsal in the wintertime. So that's how I was first introduced to the sport.
And what high school did you go to, really briefly?
So I actually went to Grand Ledge High School.
Grand Ledge, you're a Comet, then. You may know Pat O'Keefe over there and company.
That's right.
Okay, nice.
Hank Long, too. I think you told me yesterday, actually, when I went down and checked out the facility for myself, he actually coached the U.S. Women's National Team, didn't he?
Yeah, he was the assistant coach for the U.S. Women's National Team when Julie Foudy and Mia Hamm were there. Wow. And he also coached, I believe it was Georgetown University. The story I tell to kind of let people know how Hank was, he's actually the answer to a Trivial Pursuit question.
Really?
Yeah. The Trivial Pursuit question was, what coach in college soccer was the one that broke the University of North Carolina's winning streak in soccer? And the answer is Hank Long.
Are you serious?
Yep, I'm serious. Yep.
How in the world did you get Hank to come on board and coach you all?
You know, that's one of the biggest blessings of my life. I've known Hank for a while. He's an amazing guy. He came to Lansing to start a soccer club, and he stuck around till most of us were up into college, and then he right now, I believe, lives in Virginia.
Yeah, definitely, Jeremy. I mean, one thing about this sport, obviously, is that, like you mentioned, it's fast-paced. It's easy for people to get along with it. What sort of support have you seen in these first 2 years?
So, honestly, it's been amazing what we've seen. We get anywhere from 300 to 500 people to our home games, which, is great for futsal, great for a sport that is relatively unknown in the area. And what we've noticed is the people that come to the games, they fall in love with it. So, sometimes the home games get pretty intense, pretty exciting because people are, wild at the games. They really enjoy the experience.
Have to ask, you talk about 300 to 500 people at these games. Jeremy, when evaluating the fandom for this, and I like to compare it to what's going on at Lansing United right now and just this soccer craze here in mid-Michigan. Is there any relationship that you guys have with Lansing United at all?
No, actually, no. I've never met Jeremy Sampson. What they're doing at Lansing United is amazing. Amazing for the sport. Heard nothing about positive things for them. What's going on here in Lansing is really special in terms of kind of the soccer, futsal craze. And so we don't have a relationship with them, but, we know of them and the great work that they do here in Lansing.
So give our listeners a bit of pub here when it comes to your upcoming games. I know you all are on the road all of next week. And then the home opener is going to take place June 23rd. Am I right?
Yeah. So we start our National League of Professional Futsal season, which there's six teams on the East Coast, six on the West. So we play five away games and five home games in the Eastern Conference. Our first away game is actually in Baltimore next Friday. So we're going to be flying out there on Friday. We'll play Sporting Maryland. Then we'll have to do a quick drive to Philly on Saturday to play the Philadelphia team. And then we'll fly in over to Boston to play actually currently the top futsal team in the country, Safira FC, which will be definitely a challenge on that Sunday. And then the following week, June 23rd, which is on Friday night, 7 p.m. at the Aim High Sports Complex, Sporting Maryland will be coming to Lansing to play us. It's kind of an historic game. We've never had a team from the East Coast play in Lansing yet at a professional futsal game. Sporting Maryland is one of the top teams in the country, and it's going to be an amazing time.
Definitely, Jeremy. And then I guess just a few more questions for you, but to touch on the level of play, obviously this is the premier futsal league in the United States. What can people go out there and see, and just how good are these guys that you're playing with?
Yeah, so futsal is definitely growing in the United States. You know, all of our guys, they have other jobs. They do this, you know, either a part-time basis or just for the love of the game. But the level of play this year, I think, is pretty incredible. We have actually three guys from Brazil. We got a player coming in from Florida. We got a player coming in from California. Our goalkeeper is actually from Liberia in Africa. We have two players on our team right now that have represented the USA on an international level.
It's impressive.
Yeah, and then Sporting Maryland is a lot of the same story. They actually have a lot of foreign guys. They have a player that played for Italy's top professional futsal league, Milano Calcio, I think it was the name of the team. So he's on there. They have a lot of veteran players, powerhouses on their team. So it's definitely going to be kind of a battle of, you know, the power and then the upcoming team, which you know, would be us.
Final two questions for you, Jeremy. You all don't get paid for this, right?
That's right. Yeah, the players right now, you know, in the wintertime, we have a couple of them on contracts. In the summertime, we have a couple of them, but most of them are not paid.
And the profits that you get at the door, I mean, does that kind of trickle down just to the organization in general, just to the team?
Yeah, so the way that we view, you know, the pro team is really, in the first couple of years here, we're putting all the money that we, you know, that we make from the games and sponsorships and things like that and putting it back into the team. We see this first couple of years as an opportunity to showcase futsal in its purest form to the people of Lansing. So that's our goal for the team. And so that's, you know, that's kind of our, we just reinvested in the team. We want to create an amazing experience for the fans. You know, we really try to do a good job. We have an MC at the games. We have, you know, lights, and we do the whole announcing thing. And, you know, so we try to make it a really professional environment as we can and an exciting experience for families. You know, at the end of the day, you know, sports is about entertainment. It's about doing something, you know, going to watch a game with your friends. And those are the memories that you know, those are the experiences that you remember. So our goal is to create memories through futsal for people in Lansing.
How can people come out and see you guys? Again, home opener is June 23rd. How much at the door?
So tickets are $5 at the door. Kids under 12 are actually just $1. We want to encourage families to come out. It's a kid-friendly environment. It's at Aim High Sports Complex right by the Summit. And you can get tickets online at lansingfutsal.com. And then you can buy tickets at the door as well. Doors will open at 5:30. The game starts at 7, and it should be a great time.
And Isaac and I, we've chatted about this. We plan on bringing a video feature to our listeners and viewers as well later on, right, Isaac?
Absolutely. I know, Jeremy, you as well, of course, just do great work with the youth side of things too. So, of course, it's important to mention that component as well, growing the game from the roots up.
All right, Jeremy Kleppel, you have been fantastic owner and player for Lansing City Futsal. Jeremy, thank you for your time, and we look forward to having you back on in the future, all right?
All right, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You got it. All right. Coming back from the break, I've been sitting on this whole hour. We have a special guest for you all. Danton Cole, first-year head coach for MSU Hockey, will join us live here on the air to close things out. Don't go anywhere. ¶¶ Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have just under 10 minutes left here, and we have our second guest ready on line one. He is now going to be approaching his very first year, debut year, as the head coach of MSU Hockey. It is truly my pleasure to have right here on Current Sports, Danton Cole. Danton, how you doing, my man?
Al, I'm doing outstanding. Thank you.
Oh, glad to have you on. We've been trying to put this into works for quite some time now. First off, Danton, I have to ask, what's the preparation been like as you are now on the heels of your first year, my man?
It's been great. Hitting the ground here running wasn't too hard. Just the infrastructure that's in place and the people. And, you know, we've got, you know, Dave Kerr and Tom McGee, who have been here a long time. So, you know, we don't need to come in and reinvent all the different positions. You know, all that was there. So the coaches, you know, we could get going on recruiting and fundraising and doing the things that we need to do. And then I'd rather have all the players around. They're gone for the summer. But it does give us a little time to get that prep work done. So, you know, we're busy, but we don't feel rushed. Everything's been great.
Yeah, I was about to ask, I mean, what's that timeline like since the players are away for the summer? I mean, when do they return to campus and when can you begin workouts?
Well, we'll have the incoming freshmen. They'll take the second 5 weeks. So July 5th, they'll be in. And then a bunch of the sophomores and juniors are coming back. So we'll probably have 16 or 17 guys from July 5th on, which is good. Unfortunately, you know, with the NCAA rules, we can't spend a lot of time on the ice with them until regular classes start at the end of August, beginning of September. But they can get back here. They can skate as a team. They can work out over, you know, with our strength coach and do some things like that. So there's a way we can get moving forward, and it works out real well.
Danton, as you know, has been well documented the state of MSU hockey in these past few years under the then tutelage of Mr. Tom Monastis. When you look at the state of the program right now and trying to breathe new life and bring a winning culture to the forefront here on campus at Monice Arena, Danton, where in the world do you begin?
Well, you know what? At the start, hey, to borrow the phrase, you know, looking at the guys we had, and we did, you know, I think the first thing was, you know, just take an overall evaluation and temperature of the players that we have and the guys that are returning and try and get a feel on that. And then you map out where you need to fill the holes in. You know, a lot of the recruits for next year were already done. We have a little bit of room, and, you know, we'll probably add one or maybe two other guys from here on out, but they're, you know, it's pretty slim pickings this time of the year. And if it's not the right guy, we don't want to just add to do it. So we'll be careful with that. And then, you know, we started in terms of how the guy's mindset was is probably the best way before they left and what they needed to do just before they left. And then over the summer and how we expect them to come back and what kind of shape and the tempo that we want to play at. I think they're capable of doing that if they're dedicated and on things this summer. So we kind of pushed along those lines, and then the recruiting starts where, you know, you start looking in the out years, starting with a year from now where we're going to have to be replacing guys and try and put a plan together. And as always, you know, the recruiting is the lifeblood of a program. And Joe Exter and Chris Luongo have done a great job. They've been out there beating the trails, and the reception's been outstanding, and we've got a lot of interest and higher-end guys calling us, and I think momentum has been very good.
And you talk about recruiting. Danton, I mean, you have been the head coach with the National Team Development Program since 2013 and with USA Hockey since 2010. What advantage, if at all, does that give you on the recruiting trail?
Well, then, you know, I think it's twofold. I think one, you know, guys want to develop, and whether they're going to play in the NHL or not, that's their end goal. And, you know, when you have a track record and you can point to, geez, I think I've had 84 guys that have played for me that have gone on to play in the NHL, and I think that's probably a lot higher than anybody in the NCAA right now. I think that helps in terms of, you know, where they want to get to and what they want to learn. And then with the NTDP, I think an understanding of the process and how early it starts and where those things work themselves out is a pretty good advantage. And knowing the guys that are the regional scouts and knowing the player personnel director that's there, talk to him a lot. You get an idea of where guys are at and who's on their radar. And because you have to start earlier. If you wait until the first year that those guys are there, and those are the best players in the United States. If you wait until that year, most of them are already gone. So you got to get started a little bit earlier and get your book on them a little bit earlier, get them on campus and show them what you have before it's too late. So I think both those things will help us out a lot.
Danton Cole, first-year head coach of Michigan State Hockey. And, Danton, we plan on getting you later on this summer and, of course, on the heels of the MSU hockey season later on here on Current Sports. We're looking forward to that. But we're short on time right now. I will be remiss if I did not ask you this question. With the news, of course, surrounding the MSU football program and the sexual assault investigation, I just want to know what the mood has been like around MSU athletics and what's been your reaction to it.
Well, you know what? I think the thing that I've really noticed in since I've been here, and you know that's been ongoing and certainly not over with the press conference. I just think from a leadership standpoint, and I'm a big fan of Coach D'Antonio's and Mark Hollis, and I think that you know that's a really difficult thing to navigate through, and you know President Simon, you know to get through all that. But I think they've done as good a job as you could do. I think they're all really good people. They're real professional. I think the people on campus here believe in them. And you know what? Bad things happen, and it's how you deal with it. And I think they've done things in the right order and been real professional. And I think the mood around here reflects that, and that it's a good family here. And I think people believe in each other, and they treat people the right way. So, you know what? I always look at a long view on that. I think things will... We'll settle down, and with the right people in place, good things will happen.
Dan, we are wishing you good things in your first year as head coach for MSU Hockey. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon, my friend.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, Al. Thank you.
You got it. Right on time, right? We are unfortunately out of time. No, we'll continue the NBA Finals conversation tomorrow. Isaac, I'm sorry. Loaded show, dude. Unexpectedly loaded show on the back end, right?
I didn't disagree with anything you said, believe it or not, at the first half hour.
That's rare. I love it, man. All right, we go at it when the mics are off, folks. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. As always, have a great afternoon and be easy, people.